Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guests on this episode are Fritz Michel and Gavin Price of Young Allies. The group has just issued its debut EP, Fingers Entwined. The band members share a history of stage performance outside the musical world, especially around the experimental theater company Elevator Repair Service. Michel and Price recently discussed the collaborative nature of Young Allies, how being in a rock band intersects with the world of theater, and why Chuck Berry remains an undeniably brilliant light in the world of rock and roll. That's Fritz Michel and Gavin Price on Into Music, coming up now. While we're waiting, if you don't mind, how did you get interested in accents?
Accents, that's an interesting question. Well, I was born in France, and so I grew up speaking French as my first language. So I spoke French with my friends, French with my siblings, English with my parents, French at school. So I was truly bilingual. And then I moved to the States in fourth grade. So I moved from Paris to suburban New Jersey. So I spoke like this, and everyone was made life a bit difficult for me. So I guess I always had a kind of a chameleonish quality to my life.
I just really appreciate that about people when they understand accents and also want to learn them as something to draw from. So
yeah, you know, I suppose it's kind of like learning different keys in music, right? And it's really interesting in language,
yeah,
per se. You know, I spent many years I've been trained as an actor. You know, I worked on Broadway, I worked in movies, and Gavin's actually also an actor as well. And a lot of the work I did as an actor was in accents because I have fluidity with languages. And I think accents is really just about learning language, learning to speak and to communicate. It's a little trick, I guess, and especially in my acting days, I was, you know, my last name is Michel. I'm born in France. My parents are American, but because I played a lot of French roles because I love French. I speak French. Well, I don't know if I look French. I certainly can pass as French, or I am French to a certain extent. And so in Los Angeles, you know, as in music, it's, you know, it's always good to find yourself. I guess it gives you a good sense of who you are. You know, I think the more specific you can be about yourself, the easier it is for your work to find an audience. It's my general feeling on that. Yeah, you got to find your authentic voice somehow. We all have to find our way to authenticity somewhere along the way.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And Gavin is here. Hi, Gavin.
All right. Hey, Gavin.
Hey. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, yeah. You bet. Glad you're here.
Gallery view. I'm gonna put a gallery on so I can see you. All right. Hey, Gavin.
Hey.
So Zoom it is. Gavin and I were just in the studio on Friday. We recorded a cover of Chuck Berry's "You Never Can Tell" as the fourth song on our EP. Do you know that song?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the Pulp Fiction song.
Yeah,
I'm a huge fan of that song. And it was funny when we were looking to we did this residency last month in Long Island City, and we were looking to add a couple of covers because we play a lot of my original songs. But I always think playing covers is a good way for an audience to find their way into your sound. So, and You Never Can Tell is a song I've always loved. And I mentioned it to Phil. I said, "Hey, Phil, what do you think about this one?" He goes, "You know, Fritz, I've played that at just about every single solo gig I've ever done." And I was like, "Really?" I was like, "Well, all right, that's your song." And we played it, and it was, you know, went really well for the, you know, we played it, I guess we played it all the shows, right, Kevin? And it was a big hit. So then I decided to include it on the EP. So,
yeah, well, we sort of backed into that choice because as we were releasing the EP, the debut EP, for Young Allies, we were like, you know, realized that the distribution platforms were like, okay, you can release an EP if it's a three song EP, if one of the tracks is over 10 minutes. And we don't have any of our songs that are over 10 minutes. So we were like,
I'm not sure you'd want to have a song over 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. So we were like, well, maybe, you know, maybe we can do this. Maybe we can come up with another song. And so, you know, I think that was sort of the top of the list for us. And and we went into the studio in one day and banged the whole thing out in one day. It was actually an incredible feat because we were looking at each other. We're like, oh, man, the studio musicians, this is the stuff that studio musicians, you know, are really good at, is coming in, looking at the charts, cranking it out, and, you know, moving on to the next thing. But I think by virtue of the fact that we had been playing together and had become such a tight band, we were able to just, you know, jump right into the studio and just crank it out.
Yeah, it was nice to work that fast, actually.
Yeah.
It's good to be on deadline. Forced into it.
I want to come back to that, because that to me seems at the core of what this band is. But since we are talking about Chuck Berry, it's so funny that you're mentioning him. I was thinking about him yesterday in this conversation I've had with many people about what a great lyricist he was, you know?
The best.
Yeah. And the things that he, you know, you look at something like Brown Eyed Handsome Man or something, the things that he was talking about in songs, you know, really, really good.
I think, you know, he's very specific. He's straight and to the point, and he's extremely colorful. You know, it's an irresistible combination, and he's writing about themes that we all love, you know, that we all love, you know, to that adventure and teenage romance and driving and having fun. So I think that's part of his enduring appeal. I mean, he's a showman, and his sense of diction, you know, he's almost more of a, Phil was talking about it, you know, his, you know, one of the things that I think makes Chuck Berry, you know, not only a wonderful lyricist, but a wonderful performer, is how clearly he sings and speaks. You know, he enunciates everything. You don't miss a beat on his lyrics. You know, there's no, he's not swallowing any sounds, you know, it's all razor sharp.
So that leads me to the thing, which is that listening to this band, I was like, oh, this is like, I don't worry about genres very much, but I was like, oh, this is rock and roll. This is like that forgotten form, right?
Yeah, right. Someone just told me that I'm not sure that it matters, but the classic rock is one of those categories they don't have on the main stage anymore. Is that possible on the Grammys? It's like they give that award like in the classic, along with classical and, you know, other obscure music genres. Someone told me last year, but I don't know if it's come to that, but. It's still around. It's still kicking around, though, at least the way I see it.
And I guess that when I think of rock music, right, we go back to that thing of four or five people in a room creating together. And that's what is at the heart of Young Allies, right?
That's right. That's right. I think, you know, everything is collaborative. We both come from a theater background, filmmaking background. I mean, I think all artists, I guess maybe visual artists aren't as collaborative, or at least they don't say they are, but I don't see what's the point of making art if you don't have people to do it with. You know, there's strength in numbers. It's the way, you know, I've always approached it. You know, you're going to do better having some editor. You know, look, writers need editor. You know, we all need each other to edit, listen, give feedback, and ultimately music, play instruments too. It's not a one-man show here. You know, it's not a walking around with like the accordion and the drums and the various other things that when you see the one-man band, at least that's I'm not aspiring to that.
At least I've always felt that, you know, especially from my coming from the theater background as a like a making theater with an ensemble with a group of people, one of the big lessons that I've taken away is like, if you let the people be the authority for the work, they reveal some incredible things. You know, people are sort of always giving you unexpected results. You know, and that's
true.
The beauty of a music arrangement. You know, it's almost like I almost see it like jazz a little in the way that we play. We're playing like rock and roll, almost like jazz, where, you know, we have sort of the arrangement generally if you listen to the recording, but then there's a lot of room, you know, and we sort of make sure that we are listening to each other. And I know this is something that a lot of bands do and they like to do. And I think it's sort of the sign of like a successful band is like, can you both get something out through your hands and also keep your ears open? It's sort of an impossible task, you know? So, but it's like one of the, you know, it's one of the most enduring possible impossible tasks of music. And it seems like, you know, if you can hit that stride, that sort of perfect Lagrange points of like the gravitational balance of listening and playing, like, you know, so that there were shows at the residency where we were like, we looked at each other, we were like, that was a good arrangement, you know.
It's true. It's true. And you know, and bringing and then but then when you try to capture that when you come back into the studio, you're trying to capture that, you realize how important the audience is in any art that you make. Because you know, you take something that you've been playing live and then you say, okay, we want to make this sound like we're playing it live. But you know, so much of it, like as in a play, you know, depends on the feedback. And so it's a bit of a conundrum, I suppose. But I guess film is that way too, right? Yeah, I mean, like making a music video, you don't really have your audience until you're done with it. I mean, Gavin and I have made a lot of music videos together as well for most of my songs before Young Allies, when I was just kind of on my own. That's how we met, making music videos. You know, film, I guess, is one medium that you don't really have your audience until you put it out, but you're still, I guess, at least hoping it lands. I guess my approach to that is I always want to make something that, whether it's a song or something visual, that I would want to listen to or that I would want to watch. That's kind of my criterion. So in that way, the audience is always involved, because I'm not going to make something that's not going to be, you know, I try to put myself in the shoes of an audience. So
Well, yeah, like
some.
for instance, when we were making, we have a music video for Fingers Entwined, which is the first release of Young Allies. And it's this, it takes this plot line of Dorothy and Oz, and it's just sort of like a weird reinterpretation, you know, this like a yet a whole nother 21st century into reinterpretation of like this journey of, you know, somebody in a weird place and trying to escape. In this version, they're actually sort of caught in this land of miniatures and trying to get out. And
Sure.
but you know, part of the process, like making it, is like having to sit back, because you know, because as I was like storyboarding the thing, you know, you have to start from scratch and say like, okay, what is this gonna feel like to somebody who has no idea what we're dropping into, you know? And it's a little bit like that for music too. It's a lot easier, I think, in a way, to hear it for music, because it's like you're just hearing it in the room. You sort of know what the music sounds like. But when you're making a music video, or you know, making theater, for instance, like it's a different hat to wear, you know. And so I've always felt like in that way, making a music video is like making music, because you have to follow your gut of what the comp what you think the composition might end up feeling like. It's all about tempo, you know. And that's how I think in a lot of ways how we made that music video. It was like, let's just close our eyes and then come up with the
Yeah.
next scene.
Well, ultimately, well, and ultimately, you're telling a story. So, as long as you stick to, like, again, if you go back to Chuck Berry, you're telling a story. You know, that's like, you never can tell. You know, c'est la vie, say the old folks. He goes to the show, you never can tell. But there's a number of very specific things that happen along the way, right? The young Madame and Monsieur, you know, they go, they ring the chapel bell, they get their apartment, they stuff the coolerator with the ginger ale, they, you know, buy a hi-fi phono. And annoy their neighbors, they get married, and all along people are commenting along. So you know, it does have a very specific arc in that way.
Right. And meanwhile, the day that we cut that song in the recording studio, you sent a picture to our tech, to the band text
That's true.
chain, of a ginger ale and, like, I don't know, it was like pad thai, like in your freezer, like waiting
It's
for you.
true. I didn't realize it was there, but until I got home, I was like, oh, I've got ginger ale and a TV dinner in my fridge. How about that?
In
Some
the
in the coolerator.
coolerator.
I love
What a
it.
great word too, right? I mean, I don't know, Jeff, what was the last time you or I just I coolerator is just the greatest thing ever.
It's so specific. It gets to be his
Yeah.
word, right?
Yeah. That's
Really.
right. That's
Yeah.
right. Everything
Well,
about it sounds enticing.
yeah. Thinking about this connection with theater, I guess I think sometimes if like I'm fascinated by you know, groups of actors who work together a lot. I think about, you know, the people that came out of SCTV, for instance, who had decades together, you know, Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy and stuff. And I think some of that is being able to feed off of each other's like strengths and weaknesses, you know, so weaknesses, finger quotes. And I think that's true in a band. It's like, oh, you do this great. I can't do that, but I'm going to do something that meets that and fills in this space. And it's going to be different than when other people do it. Does that make sense?
100%. I mean, you know, you're really lost without you, without your collaborators, I think. I mean, you know, you know, especially coming from the background that we do. I mean, it's very much of a group effort to make anything work. And yeah, like you say, we all have strengths and weaknesses. And so yeah, let's make the most of it. Everyone's going to contribute. It's the human condition.
Yeah, it's like there's like a group advocacy for the greater good in a way, because like it makes me think about, you know, I know, keep thinking back to when we were just in the studio, right? Because there's so many great examples of something that happened. So, you know, we cut this record for You Never Can Tell, and which will be out at the end of July. Exactly. You know, I have this precision bass. And, you know, and I was playing this, we all played the track, we were cutting the track, and we're like, this is too frantic. Like, what's going on? What's happening? You know? And, you know, and so the first thing I thought was like, okay, well, let me change what I'm doing, you know? And so I did like a sort of a smoother bass line, which really helped. And then we got in later and we were like, whoa, there's a lot of squeaking going on, you know? And this is like, maybe this is a little bit too much insider baseball, but like we ended up switching the P bass just to a bass that had like smooth strings, you know? And I did the whole other track with this sort of new, sort of less frantic variation of the arrangement, you know? And it really was like, to me, just because I'm the bass player, of course, it's just all about, you know. But to me, it was like a world of a difference, you know. It was like, wow, like I could really hear the arrangement for me opening up, you know. And to me, having the mirrors of the other guys, being able to like hear what I'm doing and then reflect it back to me and be like, hey, you know, like, I don't know, something like, can we look at this in a different light, you know? And then sort of being able to respond back to that, you know, in the old.
What do you think? You know, maybe having a new guitar, putting your hands, put you in a different place too. I mean,
well, sure, yeah. But that ability of like to the theater background or SCTV and like the comedy improv stuff of like being able to accept the yes and, you know, and just go for the yes and you know, keep going, you know, and sort of accept. Have faith that like this group is going to come up with the thing that whatever it is wants to be, you know?
That's very true. Cause I mean, I it's funny you mentioned the Catherine. I just watched, I was flying by, I was just over in France and in England last week. I'm on the flight home. I watched A Mighty Wind, which has all those guys in it. And that great movie about folk music. And I was thinking about how they all had decades of experience with each other. And so they, you know, they know all their rhythms, they're going to continually surprise each other, but they also do have a certain shared history that makes, gives their storytelling, you know, such richness.
Yeah.
I think it means you can serve it up to each other and, you know,
yeah.
let sort of the other person can see it coming.
Yeah. Or probably be absolutely flabbergasted. I was thinking of the scenes between Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy, you know, where they're playing, what is it? There are two characters, Mitch and Mickey, I think it is.
Yeah.
Mitch, yeah. And, you know, he's kind of gone catatonic from the 60s and she's trying to pull it together with the harp and he's wandering around, barely making it to the town hall show and he goes wandering off and she's like, where is he? And he's off getting a rose. But, you know, but at the same time, you know, he is the act and you know, look, they pull it off in the end, but barely.
Well, and Gavin, what you were kind of talking about too is, you know, not everybody is crazy about box sets and outtakes, but I always love it when I'm hearing outtakes and I hear like a favorite song, but I hear like the previous take where it was just too slow, right? Or, Or the next time the drummer comes in early and it's like, oh, that's why that's the take, right? It's that maybe it's the mistake, and it's like that was the one for whatever reason.
There's a lot of there's always room for a lot of happy accidents in any artwork, any creative endeavor. Really, it's probably the best moments are happy accidents. You know, anything that's too planned, it's never going to quite go the same way every time. As an actor.
That's exactly right. That's exactly it. It's like that's so much of the heart of the group that Fritz and I, the theater company Elevator Repair Service, which Fritz and I are part of, you know, so much of how the work gets made is about the happy accident. You know, you get the people together in a room and you have this thing that everybody's attempting to do, which may or may not be an impossible task. And then a bunch of happy accidents happen. And you know, if those things coalesce, you know, in the right spider's web, you can just sort of, all you need to do is like brush up the edges. And then you've got this like mythical beast that nobody expected. And the arrangement is beautiful. You know, it's, and I think that's my favorite part of making theater. It's my favorite part of making music too. It's like, okay, everybody knows what the shape is generally.
And then it's repeatable, which is good too. Because if you can't have a beginning, middle, and end, then you won't have any form, just like a radio show.
Yeah, yeah.
So I am curious about Elevator Repair Service and the way it operates. So what I understand is the idea is to take something that exists and then depart from it, like a text or something like that, see where you go. Is that kind of how it works?
Well, you know, it really depends on the piece, you know, because I think ultimately the company has sort of made a lot of headway with taking these classic texts and staging them, you know. And so there is something to the point of like basically trying to do something different with what the thing is. But I think ultimately it's taking something that wasn't intended for this other medium and trying to, as best you can, with the highest level of fidelity, fitting this square peg into the round hole, you know, and you try to make it work as much as you can, but then like all these other elements end up having authority, you know, the shape of the original text, you know, the shape of the Great Gatsby, you know, every word of the Great Gatsby, for instance, but the fact that like, well, it wasn't intended to be a stage play, you know, and there are these versions of the Great Gatsby out there, no shade, that aren't nearly as good as ours, but that, you know, they sort of significantly transformed the text into a stage adaptation, you know. And I think the beauty of what Elevator Repair Service does and tries to do is like, you know, we use the text as an authority, as the authority in the room, you know, and the sort of the other authority is like the people. And so, you know,
that's you're more faithful to the text. So I was just thinking like, so Watchmen, so one of the songs that's on our new EP, you know, something that I found this very old medieval era poem that had a few lines that really stuck with me that had this concept of a watchman and someone being up all night and the sense of longing and it was from dated 1059. I was like, my God, it sounded somewhat relevant. And I guess that's where music does have its ability to you know, it's not super faithful to text, but you're still, you know, you're grabbing from a common thread of, you know, you're looking for common themes that we all walk through in our daily lives, you know, and you realize, hey, listen, people felt the same way a long time ago and have always tried to capture that and in with brevity, clarity, and meaning, and sometimes a little humor.
Yeah, so dealing with something that already exists, whether it's an image or a sound or something somebody says in a room, you can use as a point of departure. Just snatch it.
Because I think it's all, you know, so much about writing and playing is observational, really, right? I think you write what you know, you play what you know, and what you know is what you've seen and what's come along before you. You know, that's what informs our process. Like I said, none of us really reinventing the wheel. You know, just happen to be lucky if other people seem to enjoy it too.
Well, you know, the Watchmen track, it's really cool because it's like I sort of feel like we're reaching out, you know, 1,000 years ago, because this is an old, I forget what it's called, like the balladeer, not a balladeer.
Yeah, it's well, Paul style. It's like a yeah.
You know, who were those old people in the
Minstrel,
medieval days? Troubadour,
minstrel,
an
yeah,
old
troubadour. Oh yeah,
troubadour song.
troubadour. Yeah,
It was
troubadour.
it, it's a, it's like a, it's actually
Minstrel.
one of like the more famous troubadour songs of like southern France, sort of this like, you know, weird transitional period in history, you know, like before the Crusades, and like as like the, you know, Rome was like po sort of post-Roman Empire, and like during the Byzantine Empire. So it was this really interesting time, and communication was changing a little bit. Like then these stories, you know, they always were spread by the written and spoken and sung word, or not the written word, I'm sorry, but like the spoken and sung word. And so to be able to like get to, you know, pull a tendril from history, because I think the first line of that poem, of the old poem, which is in this sort of like ancient archaic French Provençal
Yes,
language,
that's right.
I think you transliterated it like almost somewhat directly. There's some transliterations that are like
Yeah,
word for word.
there's some that are very, you know, it's some of the words are exactly there. I mean, a couple of them, you know, I think the sheltered, I'd have to look at it closely, but I think sheltered from snow and ice, it's just about there.
Like I think the first
Yeah.
line of the old poem is like one night under the old hawthorn tree, or something like that. And it's a really beautiful image, you know, and it crafts this story of like these lovers who are hiding away, like waiting for the dawn, you know. And I
Yes,
think
that's right.
the birds are the dawn. I it's a little
Yeah, the bird. Well, yeah, the birds.
unclear.
Well, the birds are always the herald of the dawn. You know, that's always the, you know, that's always the, I've always thought anyway. You know, the when the first thing you hear when the sky starts to lighten is you start to hear the. We used to joke about it in college. It'd be like, did you catch birds if you stayed up all night? Be like, you know, that kind of the deep fear was like, oh man, I hear the birds chirping. I'm supposed to be asleep right now. It's kind of the unwelcomed noise of dawn. Yeah, did you catch birds? And then I think I threw the beans in there too because we also, I remember in college we had rooms without curtains. So if you stayed up particularly late and your window didn't have a curtain on it, you were awakened by a blast of a beam, the sun's beam early that roused you from your sleep. So that's the I guess there's something very beautiful in dawn too, but there also could be something terrifying in it.
Yeah.
The double-edged sword.
Yeah. Like there is a difference about like when you're coming home at 2 a.m. from a night out
Exactly.
and when you're suddenly awake at 2 a.m.
Right. That's right.
Right.
That's right. If it's by choice, it's a yeah. Well, I guess it's always by choice, but yes, they have two different connotations.
I don't think this song really touches on that theme, though. As far as the Watchmen is more.
Well, I don't know. I think it does, but it's
I
open to,
guess no. I guess it does.
I think it's open to interpretation. I
Yeah.
mean, it's, you know, you're wanting to hang on to that moment, or you hope that it doesn't end, you know, that kind of like you said, you know, it's ambiguous. Depends on the situation, which is the beauty, which again, I think that's the beautiful thing is if you're writing something, give people something to find their own, you know, like I think if you're telling people what to do, you know, let people find their own story in it, you know.
Yeah.
You put your idea down, but then it's for someone else to see their own. I think this song that really resonates. It's because an audience finds something that they can see themselves in it. I think that's your one
Yeah.
goal as a songwriter is to give something that hopefully people can relate to.
Yeah. Yeah, I never like it when art, or especially movies, do this all the time, like big, you know, blockbuster pop movies. They tell you exactly what to think and
Right.
exactly what's going to happen, and then they tell you again and again and again. It's like, you know, just have faith that your viewer, the listener, the other person there is going to like, they've got a flourishing imagination. You know, they can do plenty of their own work, you know, and I, like let them have that experience, you know.
Yeah, it's certainly not my job to be telling anyone what to
Well, and people will form their own associations, you know.
Yeah, I think that's what you're looking for in the that's I think that's what keeps you coming back and listening, is because you're gonna find something new in it. If someone's telling you the same thing over and over again, it's probably gonna not sit quite as well.
And a little bit of mystery. I can think about short stories that I've read, and I go, I don't know what that's about, but I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
That's right.
And
I think that that's right. You don't
you
want
go
to
back to it and you try to peel it away, and it's like, maybe you don't get anywhere for the first 10 reads, but it's a lot of fun.
That's exactly. That's right. That's exactly right. Thank you. And you're always good. And I think the same thing goes for us playing it, you know, whether you're performing it, it's also going to change. Same with doing a play or you know, again, it's always going to be something new to interpret from whether you're playing it or viewing it. The initial structure is just that. It's a framework to hang things on.
Yeah, I listened to I one of the now I'm a millennial. I'm gonna turn 40 this year, but one of the first CDs, the CDs that I bought was REM's Monster back in like, I'm not sure, it was probably like 1990. I don't know when exactly. And I had a lot of cassette tapes before that, but I came back to that CD, those tracks, like decades later, you know, and I listened to those same things again. And with my, you know, like father self, you know, like artists, you know, everything. I was like, wow, like these still hit me sort of the same, you know, even though I'm like so much of a different person. Like I sort of had this, went through the same thing listening to it that I did when I was like, you know, 8 years old. You know, it was amazing the way that that works. So I think like, yeah, things can change, including like the people, but even if the content is the same, you know, like, there's still that profound effect of like time moving.
Yeah, for sure.
Certainly can't stop it. It's always gonna keep moving along. I guess that's why you gotta keep. That's why you gotta keep making things and keep on.
You've been listening to a conversation with Fritz Michel and Gavin Price of Young Allies. Their debut EP, Fingers Entwined, is out now on major digital streaming platforms. You can learn more about the band at youngallies.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, we'd like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson.